Halloween night, 2004. Three roommates, Lauren, Adrian, and Leslie, had been enjoying their night passing out candy to kids and sharing good conversation. Eventually, the girls would run low on candy, and the time would start getting late, so the three would turn in for the night, lock up, and begin getting ready for bed. The night had all around felt very quiet and tranquil. That would be until soon after, in the dead of night, all three of the women would wake up to a loud sound of glass being shattered in the basement of the house one floor below. In one of the three bedrooms, one of the girls sits up quietly in bed when she then hears the blood-curdling screams of her housemates in the bedrooms above her. Quietly, the house falls silent. Then she hears heavy footsteps creaking on the floorboards above her when, terrified and in panic, the girl silently makes a break down the hall and out the back door into the yard. Creeping further away from the home, she stops as she hears the intruder climbing out the basement window and running off the property of the home into the night. Soon after the coast seems clear, the woman then makes her way back into the home, hoping to find nothing more than falling victim to a burglary. Unfortunately, the woman would find herself in shock and horror from the scene the intruder had just left behind. This is the case of the Napa Valley Halloween Murders, Lauren Minza, Adrian Insagna, and Leslie Ann Marzara. I'm Kendall Hudson, and this is When the Light Goes Out. February of 2004, 8 months before the horrific night on Halloween, best friends Adrian Insagna, age 26, and Lauren Minza, age 27, have been moving into a new home together in a nice, quaint, and quiet neighborhood in the city of Napa Valley. Adrian Insagna grew up in Calistoga, California, later graduating from California Polytechnic State University in civil engineering. After graduating, she would find work in Napa, working for the City of Napa Sanitation District as an assistant engineer. Aside from working, she had loved playing intramural sports such as volleyball and softball, as well as dedicating time to charity. She had been described as very intelligent and very known to be able to stand on her own 2 feet. Lauren Minza had been an all-state athlete with a political science degree at California Polytechnic State University, where she had met Adrian. At the time, Lauren worked as a coach for a volleyball team at Napa Community College. She'd been described as the jockey type, very clean, orderly, and confident as an athlete, although she was very shy and introverted. She had been the type of girl that definitely stayed within her boundaries, grounded, and very responsible. She had also brought her golden retriever, Chloe, to live with her and Adrian from her parents' house. So Adrian and Lauren had moved into a beautiful, not terribly big, Tudor-style rental home on 2631 Dorset Street, which had been nearly the perfect home the two friends pictured living in. This was a two-story home in a cozy neighborhood with an all-around perfect aesthetic. The two women had also moved in with the help of Adrian's friend, Lily, and Lily's fiancé, Eric. Lily was around Adrian and Lauren's age and was genuinely excited to see her friend find such a nice home to move into. Only years prior, Adrian had gotten into a very terrifying car accident that caused so much major damage to her body it left her recovering for months, so it probably was nice for Lily to see her friend doing so well for herself. In addition to this, they all lived within range of each other, and Adrian and Lily would be able to hang out more often. Now, Napa Valley, California is widely known for its scenic views, wine country, quiet streets, small boutiques, and all around a peaceful residence. The population at this time was roughly 75,000 locals, and again, by all accounts, there had been no sign of anything happening in this town outside of the occasional winery parties and farm markets. 4 months after moving to Napa, Adrian and Lauren would settle in nicely. They often hung out, had movie nights, gym sessions, game nights, and nights out on the town with mutual friends such as Lily. It was one night out when the friends would run into a group of girls that lived in the area. One girl in specific named Leslie Ann Mazara. Almost instantly, Lauren and Adrian knew Leslie would be their perfect third roommate. Leslie had just so happened to have been looking for a new place to live, and they had an open third bedroom. Leslie was 26, originally born in Orlando, Florida, described as having a fun, flirty, and engaging personality. Prior to moving to California, Leslie had lived in South Carolina, where she had been a former beauty queen. Leslie had long brunette hair with a bright smile and had truly loved the glamorous scene and getting involved in her community. It was not long after an unhealthy relationship that Leslie felt she needed a fresh start and moved to California, working as a greeter at a very prestigious winery in Rutherford called Nabon Pinino. By June of 2004, Adrian and Lauren had brought Leslie in to live with them, and under one roof, Adrian, Lauren, and Leslie made the perfect trifecta. They decorated their home to look pristine and chic, hosted light gatherings, barbecues, and got along well with their neighbors. In addition, the ladies' home had been so well kept, many people had described the home as, quote, like something out of a lifestyle magazine, unquote. When holidays would come around, they'd be that one house to beautifully decorate, and Halloween would be no different. They hung one soul-friendly stuffed witch decoration at their door for young trick-or-treaters to acknowledge as a participating house to hand out candy. On the day of October 31st, 2004, around 7 p.m, Lauren had just been returning home from a long day of coaching her soccer team and grocery shopping. Adrian and Leslie had already been at the front door sharing conversation as trick-or-treaters had been approaching their house for candy. Lauren hadn't been super ecstatic about Adrian and Leslie passing out candy, only because how riled up her dog Chloe would get from all the strangers coming up to their house. Nevertheless, Lauren needed the load off, so joined her friends in passing out candy and kicking back. Chloe, Lauren's dog, would consistently bark at each doorbell ring, giving the girls a good laugh. According to a book on the case called Nightmare in Napa, The Wine Country Murders by Paul LaRosa, around 9 p.m. is when the Halloween night would start winding down. The girls would start to call it a night and turn in. Adrian would let the other two ladies know that she'd be making a short trip to see a guy she had been seeing on and off named Christian Lee. Being that Christian only lived about a block away from her home, Adrian knew she didn't anticipate being out too long. Meanwhile, Lauren would go to fix herself something to eat while watching a DVD set of the HBO series 6 Feet Under. Leslie would join Lauren on the couch, but wouldn't hang long until heading upstairs to bed around 9:30 p.m. About an hour later, at 10:30 p.m, Adrian had returned home, seemingly fine, finding Lauren on the couch continuing her marathon. Adrian would let Lauren know she had been exhausted and was headed upstairs to bed. Feeling exhausted herself from the long day, Lauren turned the television off, let her dog Chloe out to use the bathroom, and locked up the house. She checked the front door, the back sliding glass door that had sometimes been left unlocked, and took herself and Chloe into her first floor bedroom. By the time 11:30 p.m. had rolled around, the house was completely silent and everyone had been sleeping. Around 2 a.m, Lauren had been awakened by the brightness of the motion light outside her bedroom. Not thinking much of it, assuming that had been an animal or the other girls having late night company over, she turned back over and tried to fall back asleep. When only minutes later, she hears glass shatter from inside the home as she hears the silence broken by blood-curdling screams. The next thing she hears would be the sound of Adrian's voice screaming, quote, "Please, God help me. Somebody help me," unquote. It was as if everything had then felt silent once again, as Lauren would then start to hear footsteps walking fast back down the stairs. Immediately, with no hesitation, Lauren had bolted to the back door with Chloe out into the backyard, barefoot and terrified. Expecting the intruder to follow behind her, Lauren would think of any way to protect herself when she then heard the intruder leave the same way they found their way into the house, from the basement window. Lauren gave herself some time to process what just happened before re-entering the house. Once she had, she attempted calling 911 on the landline, but the cordless phone had been either disconnected or dead. Her next instinct was to check on her roommates. As Lauren had headed back up the stairs into one of the bedrooms, she would encounter a truly horrifying scene. Lying motionless on the ground on top of a pile of laundry was Leslie, who had been visibly stabbed multiple times. Blood had been pooling beneath her. Only inches away from Leslie had been Adrian, lying in a similar state, stabbed multiple times but breathing rapidly, staring up at the ceiling. Panicked, Lauren ran over to Adrian's side, hoping to stop the bleeding, when she had felt herself slip on what had been a pool of blood beneath her. Unsure of how else to help, Lauren retrieved her cell phone and ran outside to her car, trying to call police, but it would be too late. By the time officers and paramedics arrived around 2:15 a.m., Leslie had been pronounced dead on arrival. Adrian would pass only minutes later. Everything that just took place only took all but 10 minutes to transpire, but the question remained, who would do this to three beloved young women and why? From the scene of the crime, detectives also instantly felt that this had to have been a crime of passion and most likely someone the girls had known. The overkill of the two women made that clear, and taken from the lack of any theft showed that this just wasn't a normal home invasion. The killer had a clear target. There had been some DNA evidence left at the scene, but what really made the investigation tough was the fact that Halloween had been only one night prior. A lot of people had been walking around the usually quaint neighborhood, making it hard to narrow down on any specific suspects. Police had initially begun their search with each of the roommates' close circle of friends, families, ex-boyfriends, and current guys they had been seeing. Over 100 samples of DNA had been collected from people they all knew, and nothing came up connecting the evidence found at the crime scene. At first, investigators thought that this could have been someone most likely connected to Leslie, being that she had been the most well-known and outspoken of the three ladies, but this too only led to a dead end. They checked the area of registered sex offenders, but most, if not all, had solid alibis, and it started to seem as if the killer had been far off their radar. Meanwhile, the investigation had been ongoing. Friends and family members of Adrian and Leslie had been mourning the loss of their loved ones, horrified and confused as to who could have taken the lives of these women so violently. The entire Napa community had been on edge, but held vigils in honor of the two women, and many of the ladies' family and friends spoke out to the press and hoped to catch their killer. Adrian's best friend Lily, who helped the girls first move in, would be one to plead for any information on the monster that took the life of her friend. Outraged by the months passing by, Lily would take to the press to say, quote, "Somebody must have something. Somebody out there knows something. Somebody would have noticed a friend of theirs acting strange. It's important. It's important to find out who did this and to find out why. In some sick way, I want to know. I want to know how it happened. I mean, this is my friend. I want to know what happened to her." Unquote. Together, Lauren, Lily, Lily's boyfriend Eric, and the families of the women would do everything in their power to make sure Adrian and Leslie had justice. Unfortunately, after still processing the trauma of losing her best friends, Lauren would encounter criticism and judgment, being the only survivor of the two brutal murders. This had only added to the guilt and shame she had felt for having been the only survivor. Most commonly, sole survivors find it hard not to blame themselves or ask themselves, "Why me?" Desperate for answers, Lauren turned to finding two local Los Angeles psychics, Marty and Michael Perry, hoping to find any lead on the murderer. To Lauren's surprise, the psychics had claimed that they were able to communicate with Adrian and Leslie. Feeling like this could be her best bet, Lauren contacted investigators, convincing them that this could be their key to solving her friend's murder. Investigators agreed to hear the psychics out, desperate and grasping for any straws. The psychics would call out to Adrian and Leslie to help them describe the perpetrator's appearance. What had been sketched was a portrait of what looked to be a 20 to 30 year old Caucasian man, bald with a goatee. Shocked by how familiar the sketch looked to Lauren, she forwards the sketch to investigators, giving them at least something to work with, even if it felt a little outlandish. Interested in what these psychics had to say, the investigators would decide to bring them and Lauren into the station to find out anything more. To the shock of both Lauren and the investigators, psychic Michael Perry would turn to Lauren allegedly being in contact with Adrian, and turn to ask her, quote, "Who's Lily?" Investigator Kirk Primo and Lauren couldn't help but exchange glances, knowing that Lily had been one of Adrian's best friends. At this time, it had been September of 2005. almost a year had passed of no leads when police would begin to start letting out information to the public they had kept close to the chest. They were hoping releasing evidence to the public would scare the perpetrator into coming forward, and to their luck, it worked. Police had turned to the news to share that they had made a connection to the killer from a cigarette butt left at the scene. They insisted their suspect turn themselves in, and almost immediately, sure enough, the killer came forward. Late that September, Adrian's mother, Arlene, would receive a call from investigators letting her know that they got the guy who murdered her daughter. The perpetrator had been Lily Pujol's then-husband, Eric Koppel. Chillingly, the photo that the psychics had drawn was a near-accurate image of Eric. He did have a goatee, and although he wasn't bald, he did have very short hair. The arrest of Eric Koppel came as a surprise to many because he had no criminal record, but furthermore, somehow managed to evade being questioned by police, amid being in the girl's circle of friends. He actively took time to support the family and friends, cried at funerals of both women, and brought comfort to Lily in her grief for months. Eric and Lily had actually rescheduled their wedding day that had been planned to be on November 1st, 2004, one day after the murders. The wedding would follow the next year in February, where Eric would accept loving speeches from Adrian's own family. Lily had been completely unknown to her then-husband's chilling secret. Rewinding to 1 year ago, that Halloween night in 2004, Eric and Lily had been at a Halloween party when they had gotten into an altercation, resulting in Lily dropping him off at their shared apartment. She refused to stay home and left to stay at her parents' house for the night. During his court trial, Eric would claim that he had left his apartment shortly after, angry with a knife, unsure why he even had it. Though fully aware of his intentions, Eric had headed directly to the house on Dorset where Lily's friends had lived. He smoked a Camel Turkish Gold cigarette prior to breaking in, tossing the butt, and heading through the basement windows up the two flights of stairs to enact the senseless murder of Adrian and Leslie. After, Eric fled out the house from the same window he came through and ran from the scene, burning his clothes and trying to dispose of the weapon, not considering the evidence he had left behind. During questioning, Eric had admitted that he had entered the home that night, cutting the phone cords and stabbing the two women in a blind rage. Eric claimed that it had been jealousy and rage that led him to murdering his fiancée's friends. It appeared that Eric did not like the ever-growing bond that Lily and Adrian shared together. In his eyes, Lily had been becoming much more independent and freer after Adrian had moved close by, spending more time around her. Eric wanted nothing more than to control Lily, and he felt Adrian was in the way. After months of gathering a plethora of DNA evidence in 2006, during court proceedings, Lauren as well as other family and friends took time to speak on behalf of their loved ones. Adrian's mom, Arlene, would share, quote, "Eric, you knew Adrian, you knew me, and I know you. You are the man who violently stabbed to death the best friend of the woman you loved. That is not love, Eric. You cannot love Lily and bring a knife into Adrian's home and stab her again and again and again," unquote. Leslie's mom would share, quote, "He was evil disguised as a friend," unquote. And Lily would state towards Eric, quote, "I wish with all my heart these events had been avoided. There is nothing you could do to make me love you any less," unquote. Eric read a statement to the court admitting that he had regretted his actions and was consumed by jealousy of losing Lily. Eric had been given a deal pleading guilty to two counts of first-degree murder to avoid the death penalty. The judge's verdict would be a life sentence with no possibility of parole for the first-degree murder of Adrian Insagna and Leslie Mazara. Adrian's family continues to spread awareness and positivity, creating a scholarship in her name to help young women looking to pursue a degree in engineering. Leslie's family continues to create volunteer work and community programs in keeping the spirit of Leslie's love for her community alive. Today, Lauren still battles with the trauma of losing her two closest friends, but continues to share her story in hopes that other women can take the right steps to keep themselves safe. That is the case of the Napa Valley Halloween murders, Adrian Insagna, Leslie Ann Mazara, and the survival of Lauren Minza. Thank you all for listening, and you can follow on Instagram and TikTok at WTLGOpodcast, and please do not forget to like and subscribe wherever you're listening. With that, I'll see you next when the light goes out.